nearly 40 years, Soul Train was a fixture on Saturday morning and afternoon television. Baltimore-based journalist and author Erica Blount Danois has published articles in the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, and in many other publications. She teaches journalism at the University of Maryland College Park. She has always been a fan of Soul Train, and now she's an expert. In September, she published Love, Peace, and Soul, Behind the Scenes of America's Favorite Dance Show, Soul Train. I'm Tom Hall, and this is an encore broadcast of a conversation I had with Erica Blount Danois here on Maryland Morning last September. Good to see you. How are you?
Good. Thank you for having me.
And congratulations on the book.
Thank you. I'm very excited to be here.
It's a fascinating subject for many reasons. Partly, I think, because of the time period in American history that this program began and went through. As you said, it started in 1970. It was on, until about 2006. Mm-hmm. And when you think about everything that had just happened when it started, Dr. King had been assassinated 2 years earlier. Mm-hmm. Watergate was right around the corner, the Vietnam War, et cetera. So its place in history is really important.
Yeah, it's interesting that at the time, all of those things actually were part of the reason why I think he was able to create the show, because after that, the Kerner Commission came to the conclusion that, as a result of the riots, the media had not had sensationalized the riots and were not reporting on them from an insider's perspective. So the doors began to open for blacks in the media and for, generally speaking, for blacks on television. So the 70s had this proliferation of black programming from, Julia to shows like I Spy and the original Bill Cosby show. There was a door that had opened for a mm-hmm. show and also a void that needed to be filled with a show like Soul Train.
So Don Cornelius, who committed suicide just last year, he was 75 years old. Mm-hmm. The reasons for that still sort of unclear, I guess. Was he sort of in the right place at the right time? He had started this as a show in Chicago and then soon thereafter got it syndicated throughout the United States.
I think definitely, yes, he was in the right place at the right time and realized that there was this void that needed to be filled. In part because he had worked as a DJ at WVON and he knew what the music, black music was doing. He was doing what's called, what are well known as sock hops, mm-hmm. but he was doing it with soul music. So he was going to different high schools and bringing various artists to high school dances, and he
and
realized.
And so his act was portable. He would go from
exactly.
school to school, and
yeah.
he called this moving caravan of his the Soul Train.
He called it the Soul Train.
Yeah.
He did call it the Soul Train. He went to the clubs and saw that there were kids that, had these innovative dance moves, et cetera. So he came up with the idea and created a pilot and pitched it to the local station, which was WCIU-TV, a UHF station that had a lot of other ethnic programming.
And its format was obviously very much influenced by American Bandstand and the way the show sort of developed. What was the relationship between, was there a relationship between Cornelius and Dick Clark and those two programs?
Yes, there was, quote unquote, a relationship. Yes, Dick, in fact, early on in Chicago had tried to buy the show from Don. He was fortunate enough to convince the owners at WCIU to have, let him own the show. And so, Dick had taken him to lunch several times over the course of the local programming, which was not, did not compare in any way, shape, or form to what would happen when the show went national. But Dick Clark knew enough to know that there was something there that, he was missing. And so then later on, I think in 1974, Dick Clark started a show called Soul Unlimited, which was an exact replica of what Soul Train was.
And this is like 3 or 4 years after Cornelius had already established Soul Train.
Yeah, exactly. And the show had taken off almost immediately once it went national. And so he created this copycat show and was in no way, shape, or form, though, as lively as Soul Train was with, Don as the host. And, the host was a little bit of a square
compared to Don Cornelius.
Exactly.
He's sort of the epitome of cool. Right.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. But he was on a major network, so it was going to cause a real competition.
Erica Blount Danois is my guest. Her book is called Love, Peace, and Soul, Behind the Scenes of America's Favorite Dance Show, Soul Train. This show is important not just to Black America, but it was important for a lot of white Americans too, because I guess more actually the viewership was more, there were more white people watching this show than Black people, which is a huge surprise to learn.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the record executives realized that their artists, having their artists on the show, would not just reach the Black market, but also the white market or the mainstream market. And so there were plenty of white acts, though, that were on the show as well. You know, people as diverse as, you know, Rick Dees, Disco Duck, to Casey and the Sunshine Band, to the Village People, to Captain and Tennille, and Elton John, and David Bowie. So the image of Soul Train is that it is, you know, Black music oriented, but he also, you know, the guests that he brought on were diverse. You know, as long as it was good music, they were welcome on the show.
And he was had a very good ear, it sounds like, because he brought a lot of people on the show before they were as famous as they later became.
Exactly.
I mean, the Jacksons were on the show early in their career, and other people who were sort of pretty big at the time they first came on the show, I guess, were doing him a favor, helping him establish a few, like James Brown.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it's interesting because, I mean, he was this frustrated DJ at WVON, so he definitely had an ear for music. And then he was also a record exec, you know, Soul Train Records. He was writing songs. He, you know, tried his hand at singing a bit, you know, like he really, I think, also maybe was a frustrated musician.
And the brand of Soul Train was unique. It still exists today. They're running cruises now. You can go on a Soul Train cruise next month if you want. There's a Soul Train website that's, you know, full of all sorts of interviews with dancers. I mean, even some of the dancers have become celebrities in their own right.
Absolutely, yes, yeah. You know, from Demita Jo Freeman, who danced with Rudolph Nureyev for the Queen of England, and she was first, you know, sort of discovered on Soul Train when James Brown brought her on stage and Joe Tex brought her on stage. And she, you know, was a classical ballerina, trained, became like this fixture on Soul Train. Or Rosie Perez, who, you know, from her break, I guess, in Do the Right Thing, Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing. Mm-hmm. Nick Cannon danced on Soul Train. Vivica Fox danced on Soul Train. Even Walter Sweetness Peyton danced on Soul Train.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I mean, in L.A. at the time, like, that was the place to be. Like,
right.
If you made it on Soul Train, people, you know, that was better than getting a paid gig somewhere because you were famous.
Yeah. You mentioned Nick Cannon. He's married to Mariah Carey.
He is.
And he has signed a deal that allows him to bring Soul Train back. He's with NBC Universal. So at least there are plans in that regard. What chances do you give him?
Like you said, the brand has lasted. You know, it still airs on Centric. It still airs on Bounce and Aspire TV. And we love it. You know, like, I try not to miss it when it comes on. In today's sort of fractured musical landscape, I don't know if we would have the same sense of community where, you know, everybody watched the show at the same time, and then we went to school and we talked about what acts were on the show and in the 70s. However, you know, there are shows like American Idol and The Voice and, you know, So You Think You Can Dance and all those shows that work in today's marketplace. So I don't see why a Soul Train reinvented could not work.
Mm-hmm.
So
and Cornelius was very good at changing with the times. I mean, just when you think about the musical styles that were in fashion at the various points of Soul Train's existence, you know, in the 70s, soul and funk and R&B, and then into rap and hip hop, he rolled with the flow every time, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. I mean, and that's, I think he was reluctant. I talk about some of that in the book where he's, you know, noticeably uncomfortable with some of the acts like, you know, Eric B. and Rakim and Public Enemy, where he says, you know, oh, you guys are scary, you know, and, you know, he's not completely sold on hip hop, but he had people who told him, you know, this music is hot, you need to get on it and you need to, you know, it's selling, you need to be able to stay in the marketplace.
I mean, Don Cornelius was, you know, the creator, the inspiration, the animating force behind it. He hosted it for 22 years, and then he stepped aside. Was that the death knell of the show? I mean, because it lasted a few more years after that, but the fact that he was no longer on camera and a presence for viewers, you know, were they ever able to sort of recover from that?
Yeah, I think that was a big part of it. I hear people who, you know, I've been talking to people about the book and, you know, just regular everyday fans, and they say, you know, once there was no other personality quite like Don. So, you know, we had some good hosts, and they had a number of guest hosts from, you know, Cedric the Entertainer to Steve Harvey to, you know, you name it. But none of them had that it factor. You know, yeah. They didn't have that cool and the you know, the outfits and the rapport too with the artist. You know, he did know music, and he, you know, asked really, you know, poignant questions to the artist, and he knew them. Like, he also, you know, he hung out with them, so he knew a lot of them personally and had this personal rapport, you know, outside of music as well. So
sure.
You know, he would talk to Smokey about Smokey Robinson about, you know, eating at Roscoe's Chicken and Waffles, or, you know, like he loosened the artists up because he had that rapport with them. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, he's just the epitome of cool. So, mm-hmm. You know, there wasn't anybody that could replicate that.
So Dick Clark tried a knockoff, but there are also a bunch of regional knockoffs, including one that was in this market. Remind us of who Moon Man was. That was before my time in this market, so I don't know Moon Man personally.
Moon Man was a radio, and still is actually, a radio DJ. And he's on 1450 WOL, I believe. And he had the Moon Man show, which was on, I believe it was Channel 50. Yeah.
But that was a TV show, and it's a TV dance show.
It was a TV dance show. And so we would watch, and we'd actually know the people that were on the show. So it was a big deal for us to, you know, to watch TV. It's like, oh, that's so-and-so dancing, you know.
Right. Well, it's a fascinating story, and Don Cornelius, a really fascinating figure in the music industry and in American history. So thanks for writing the book, and congratulations.
Thank you.
Baltimore author and journalist Erica Blount-Danois. We spoke here on Maryland Morning last September. The book is Love, Peace, and Soul, Behind the Scenes of America's Favorite Dance Show, Soul Train. Ms. Blount-Danois was scheduled to speak about the book tomorrow afternoon at the Reginald F. Lewis Museum of Maryland African American History and Culture, but that event has been canceled due to the weather. It has been rescheduled for Saturday, March 8th. We've got some clips from classic Soul Train episodes and a link to more information about the March 8th event on our website. Come to wypr.org/Maryland Morning. That's it for us today. As Nathan has been reporting all morning, there are lots of things canceled around the area today, but if you're a pitcher or a catcher for the Baltimore Orioles, you are expected to report for your first workout this morning in Sarasota, Florida. Hang in there, folks. Spring is on the way. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. Have a great weekend.